Welcome to the Basketball Index Podcast. Today we're doing the 23-24 season in review. That is right, the season is a wrap, and I am multiple things. I feel like whenever the season ends, I'm excited, right, because the playoffs are coming up. But also I do get a thing of like, oh, I'm like kind of sad it's over, while at the same time being like, man, I was really in the dog days there. Like after the All-Star break, that was pretty tough because most of the things were pretty set in stone in terms of what we learned this year, and as well as like the playoff picture for the most part. I know the seeding was going to change, but it was like, all right, these teams are pretty much in the playoffs. These teams are pretty much in the play-in, and the majority of the teams that weren't trying to win this year, obviously not in that race. So we are through the season. The playoffs are around the corner. Very excited for that. But I wanted to do just a quick season in review, little tiny blurb for every team because, I don't know, this kind of stuff is just sort of fun. So do you guys remember the play-in tournament? That feels like it was so long ago. The Lakers won that, and it was funny. The Lakers sort of peaked at the play-in tournament. Everyone was very excited about them. Then they had a kind of a long lull, and there was talks about firing Darvin Ham. D'Angelo Russell wasn't doing a ton, and then in the final few months of the season, D'Angelo Russell playing very, very well. The team gets rolling, Rui Hachimura playing well, and LeBron looking really strong entering the playoffs. AD doesn't get hurt. That was another storyline for the Lakers, but definitely a very drama-filled season for the Lakers, as it always is. Tyrese Haliburton for the Pacers broke out as an All-NBA player and seemed like the next excellent passer, the next super end, like Trae Young, one-man offense type player. So we'll see where he ultimately falls in the hierarchy of the league, but he is already at an All-NBA level, so very exciting for the Pacers. They also traded. They made the biggest trade of the year, and they traded for Pascal Siakam, which, depending on the contract, he's an impending free agent, could be a really interesting pairing with Haliburton in terms of speeding up their timeline. So kind of holding off on what that ultimately will turn into, because again, so much of it depends on what the contract extension is this season, this offseason. But very interesting move for the Philadelphia 76ers. Obviously, Embiid in the first half was the huge scoring season kind of storyline, was a lot of fun to watch, had huge point totals. But Tyrese Maxey stepping up after James Harden forces his way out and plays at an all-star caliber level, that was very, very big. That was a jump that I think a lot of people were excited about. Really talented player, had had some big playoff games, but seeing it over the course of an entire season and to be able to make that jump, I think kind of cemented himself as the most improved player this year. For the Thunder, they were the hyped up team of the offseason. There's always, you know, a young up and coming team where the theory crafting gets really out of control in the preseason, and they shattered all expectations. Obviously, SGA played at a MVP level. Jalen Williams, probably the most underrated player in the league. And then Chet had a fantastic rookie year where if Wemby, you know, let's just say he was pushed a year or two in the draft class, just he was born in a different year, the hype around Chet right now would be really, really absurd. So the Thunder, it's really hard to be that young up-and-coming team with huge expectations and everyone picks you to have a huge year and then you become the number one seed. That is really, really impressive. So everything kind of rolling. They have a lot of young random players that people don't know a lot about. All their role players played extremely well this year. So look for those guys to maybe become household names in the future. Next, the Timberwolves. That Rudy Gobert trade is looking pretty good right now. I know the price was always very, very high, but when you have the number one defense by a very large margin and Rudy Gobert is the anchor of that and you're one of the top seeds in the West, trades, you know, if you look at them the day of, you feel a certain way. 2 years down the road, you feel maybe a different way, and then in 10 years, you might feel a third way. But right now, you're feeling really good if you're the Timberwolves because your team's very good and Rudy Gobert is a huge part of that. LA Clippers, James Harden forces his way over there. And I would say all in all, you would consider this largely a success because it started out really slow. Then they were the hottest team in the league for at least a couple weeks, if not months. And then things kind of sputtered towards the end here. Russell Westbrook got hurt and it's an older group of players. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. But overall, I'd say as a season was definitely a success. So the James Harden, a lot of drama the last few years. There's a lot of drama on this list of things I'm kind of recapping, but overall went pretty darn well for the Clippers. For the Mavericks, it looks like Kyrie and Luka definitely work. I know last year when they trade for Kyrie, it was really shaky down the stretch there. They lost a ton of games. There was a lot of question marks. This year, those two played really, really well. They missed a lot of time, but after the trade deadline, they bring in PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. And Daniel Gafford's been a huge, huge piece, just kind of cementing the rotation with legit NBA players really, really helped. And Kyrie, Luka did so much heavy lifting, and Luka potentially wins the MVP this year. So pretty good stuff for the Mavericks this season. The Nuggets, a fairly quiet 57-win season. I know Jokic is in the MVP conversation, won the championship last year, kind of business as usual for majority of the season, won a lot of games, looked pretty good, could definitely repeat. I think you're really happy if you're a Denver fan. The Pelicans somehow won 49 games this year, and no, my opinion on any of the players did not change one iota. I don't really know how that's possible, but a lot of scoring on the team, no passers. We'll see what happens comes playoff time. A fair amount of talent on the roster. I don't know if it's optimized, but definitely were able to brute force a lot of wins in the regular season. The Kings this year, I would say you're happy that you didn't have the big sophomore slump, because last year they're the talk of the town. You know, Fox and Sabonis, all the role players were playing at basically like above their level for the entire season. They have a really exciting first round playoff loss versus the Golden State Warriors, and they come back this year and De'Aaron Fox looks like an MVP candidate for the first month. And there was kind of some ups and downs with him this season, but Sabonis had a fantastic year, that like double-double kind of record or whatever thing he was on. And they just sort of ran out of dudes towards the end. Malik Monk got hurt, potential sixth man of the year candidate. And then Kevin Huerter hurt his shoulder. So I would say it's going to sound weird because of where they are, but that they didn't fall off too badly this year, I think, is a really good sign in terms of just stability of the franchise. And it's just going to happen. Some years you're just going to run out of players, and you lose two rotation pieces. That's really hard to overcome. I think they're probably going to get bounced here by Golden State in the first game. If not, you know, that's wonderful. But overall, that it just didn't have the huge sophomore slump if you're a Kings fan. I know that doesn't feel amazing, but that was something I definitely noted. The Jazz, they keep trying to tank, but they have too much talent on their roster to tank. Lauri Markkanen's a big part of that. Big year for Colin Sexton. He's had back-to-back years of positive efficiency as a scorer, where he definitely looks like a piece on either this team or, I don't know, potentially they maybe try to trade him. The Jazz are in this weird thing where they've accumulated a ton of picks, and they have some amount of young talent on their roster. Maybe not young, but like not old. And it's like they want to rebuild, but they're having trouble tanking. So the Jazz are in a weird situation, but not a bad situation. The Nets, on the other hand, they prove that no man's land is a terrible place to be in the NBA. It turns out you need on-ball players on your team, not just a ton of off-ball players. I have no idea where they go from here. If they could trade for Trae Young in the offseason, that would be really exciting. We'll see what happens with that. Also, Nick Claxton, a free agent, that could be a potential huge domino to move around the league if he's not re-signed. So the Nets in an interesting, not great position. The Rockets, they spent quite a bit of money in free agency and definitely got better. I don't know what the long-term plans for the team are, because I don't know if you believe in the Jalen Green late season run. I sure don't, but you can, you know, super athlete, understandable. It's nice to just be more competitive. They were 500 this year. We'll see, you know, they're still in figure it out mode. We'll see what happens next year, but just this season, the stability of adding a Dylan Brooks, who's one of the better wing defenders in the league, of adding a Fred VanVleet, who's a very strong 3-point shooter and pretty good all around guard. That definitely helps stabilize things. I've been a huge proponent of Ripping it down to the studs in a rebuild is potentially dangerous because you can get stuck in a forever rebuild where you just never have enough talent to figure anything out, and you keep trading players after 3 years and it just round and round it goes. I'm interested in what the Rockets did. They spent a lot of money to do it, which was maybe not the best move, but you, as a Rockets fan, you just have to be like happy that there was some respectable basketball that was played and respectable defense that was played. So I would say that's kind of been the storyline for the Rockets this year. For Phoenix, the big three had the exact problems that we thought they would have. There was injury issues, but instead of it being Kevin Durant, it was Bradley Beal, which I think as a Suns fan, you'd probably would choose. If one of those big three were going to be hurt, it would be Beal. But when they all played together, they definitely were able to just outscore teams, which was good. But you run into the problem of you essentially have three. I know Kevin Durant isn't exactly a shooting guard, but you know what I mean. Shooting guard, small forward, wants to score player. And there have definitely been some issues in terms of fluidity with that team. We'll see what happens in the postseason. I actually like their matchup for them versus Minnesota. But I don't know. Time will tell if the big three bet will pay off. For the Celtics, they were a really, really good team on paper, and they were a really, really good team in real life. This season went very, very smoothly for them. They pretty much rolled all year. They're very deep. They're very talented, poised to make a deep run in the playoffs. So I think in terms of expectations going into the year, it went very well. It's hard to be the top dog that's had some disappointing years in terms of they haven't won a championship, but they've been close. And then sometimes, you know, year three, year four of being a really good team, the regular season can be difficult because it's just so long, but they were able to just smash teams all year. So again, that if you're a Celtics fan, you gotta be pretty happy with how it went. No one, you know, no catastrophic injuries, anything like that. And I think, you're pretty happy with how things went. For the Cavs, they had an interesting year because two of their four best players missed a huge chunk of time and they still got the four seed. Garland and Mobley missed a lot of time with injuries. Donovan Mitchell looked really, really good this year after a little bit of a slow start, also missed some time. And I don't know what the future is with him getting traded, but Dean Wade finally broke out. He was a guy I've been banging the drum for years. Sam Merrill, they find a really good off-screen shooter. So they were able to find kind of those smaller pieces on the roster that they really needed. And then Jared Allen had another fantastic year. He's just a really, really solid player. So moving on, the Pistons, they lost so many games, it became a thing on Twitter of they were going to post the score, and Wingstop was sponsoring the post, and everyone was like, where's the Wingstop logo going to be in this loss post, in this loss graphic? And that was a fun thing to do sort of in the middle of the season, or maybe was that the maybe like two-fifths of the way through the season when that was happening. So that was a nice little subplot that went on. They're a very, very bad team. They're in full strip it down to the studs rebuild, and it's very confusing to try to figure out how good anyone is because they don't have a lot of NBA players on their roster. So very confusing. We'll see how it works out for them. The Knicks, they were an incredibly deep team that added more depth at the trade deadline and sustained a ton of injuries and still proved to be one of the best teams in the East. So that was a very good job of the depth proving resilient and the front office being fairly aggressive in terms of going and getting Bogdanovich and, or was that the one, Bojan? The one that was on Detroit. There's like three of them. It's very confusing. And they also got OG Anunoby, who when he has played, the team has looked excellent. They lost to Julius Randle, which hurts. Mitchell Robinson has missed a giant chunk of time. It's unclear what he's going to be in the playoffs, if he'll contribute at all. But it was a good season from just sort of like a sentimental or storyline or as a fan level for the Knicks. I don't know how it's going to end ultimately in the playoffs. I think they're just too banged up. But you can still have successful seasons for your franchise without it ending on paper in a great way. Because, like, they probably won't go to the Eastern Conference Finals because, again, they're missing Julius Randle. That's a really big piece of their team. And that can be frustrating. Or, you know, you look back in a few years, it's like, oh, they only made it to the first or second round or whatever. That's me guessing and projecting, right? But in terms of boots on the ground, being a fan of the franchise, this type of season's important. And it was also really fun because Jalen Brunson played at a super high level, played at an all-NBA level. So that is, it's fun anytime you have an all-NBA player on your team. The Grizzlies' backups got hurt this year. There was a point where like 30 players on their team were hurt. And some guys popped. Vince Williams Jr., Gigi Jackson could be really interesting NBA players. So next year when Jaw's back and the team doesn't have 30 injuries, they're going to be like, you know, those stats where it's like last year to this year type thing, they're going to like crush those stats. They're going to have like one of the biggest turnarounds probably ever because one, just Jaw. And then also this team has quite a few interesting pieces when they get healthy. For the Spurs, Wemby lived up to the hype. He was really fun to watch this year. And then also analytics-wise was extremely impressive from a defensive playmaking standpoint. Rim deterrence, rim protection, deflections, blocks, whatever you want to look at. Really good. And then also fantastic as a pull-up three-point shooter. So Wemby might end up being the best player in the league here pretty shortly. He already, for me, is defensive player of the year and potentially like fighting for that third team All-NBA. We'll see where that ultimately ends up when the awards come out. For the Blazers, oh, they're so bad this year. And DeAndre Ayton, I looked it up, has made over $103 million in his life already and slept a chunk of the season on an air mattress. And then once he stopped doing that, started playing a lot better. So that's a funny story for a, just a truly awful team this year. The Warriors, they led the league in drama. That just so much drama with Draymond Green, with Klay Thompson's decline, with you know, fans versus Steve Kerr wanting to play Kuminga more. And ultimately, this team is okay. I mean, they're in the play-in. I don't have any takes for anything. So here's the thing with the Warriors. These are all like manufactured storylines by the media, and they're not very interesting, but it is a lot of drama. So whenever there's a situation like that, I'm like, I have nothing to add to this because I don't care about this like at all. But boy, they're on TV a lot. The Bucks, they don't feel like a team. They had enough talent to brute force the regular season. Dame seems like he really does not like it there. Didn't have his typical, you know, scoring efficiency season. Bring in Doc Rivers, that also seemed to really not go well. Doc Rivers was the first person to tell you that. That was bizarre. All the quotes out of him that are just like, this isn't going well. I don't know why they did this. Why am I here? Nobody wants to be here. So that was bizarre. A lot of bizarre. The NBA is a bizarre place because it's just a bunch of like millionaire giants doing things. So it's already weird to begin with. And then the personalities are just so strange on top of that. The Heat, they hit on Jaime Jaquez. Duncan Robinson is reborn. They miss some time. I think they missed quite a bit of war to injuries this year, but they're just that typical sleeper Heat team where all of a sudden they're in the play-in and they're going to make a run. It's just what happens. We just have to accept it. As long as Jimmy Butler and Bam are on the team, it's just what's going to happen. The Raptors, also another team in no man's land. They made a ton of trades. I guess they're trying to build around Scottie Barnes. I don't know what's going on there. It's not even in this country. The Hornets are very bad. I have basically nothing to say about them. Some quality lowlights out of Jordan Poole with the Wizards. He's really fueling the TNT. Shaq and a fool. That's important just for the overall zeitgeist of the league. I also want to, you know, kind of say it here. I'm betting when that Jordan Poole contract runs out in like 3 years that he's going to go to a pretty good team as like a reclamation project and might get some value out of Jordan Poole at like age 29. Well, I don't know. We'll see where that is. The Hawks also in purgatory with the Nets and the Raptors. They're going to trade Trae Young or DeJounte Murray in the offseason potentially. I don't know if that's going to happen, but this team is not very interesting from really any perspective. They're not, because they're not terrible. Like, they can't be the Pistons where you're just rooting for a losing streak because they have enough talent to not do that. But then when you see them play like high-end teams, you're not very inspired. So The Hawks have been here for a while. They are okay. The Magic are no longer in rebuilding mode. They hit on Paolo, hit on Franz, whatever. We know, I don't know how to say names. Cornerstone players look really good. This team has a ton of NBA level talent in terms of just like their depth on their roster. That's very good. Crazy. They got the fifth seed. Really fun year for Orlando. Again, no longer in rebuild mode. That once you get out of that, whew, you wipe your brow. Now you're just in basketball mode. And you're like, hey, wherever Paolo and Franz go, that's kind of where the franchise is going to go. And then lastly, for the Bulls, they started out the year so poorly. They lose Zach LaVine for a huge chunk of the year. And they make the play-in. Free Alex Caruso. I feel like I need a free Alex Caruso tattoo or sign or something. There's only one more year on the deal, and I just need him on a better team, need him in prime time, need him playing in more meaningful games. So that's going to do it. That was like a storyline for every single team. Light on the analytics in this episode, but I didn't know. This was more fun because if you're listening to this podcast, you like the NBA a lot. I also like the NBA a lot. Talking about stats, very, very fun. We do that majority of the time here. But sometimes just kind of fun to talk about the highlights of the season, the interesting storylines, the just kind of what happened in terms of like the Kings this year. It's unfortunate because playing Golden State in the play-in, you know, there's some kind of fun possible revenge storylines, but then you realize they're down Herter and Malik Monk, and you're like, they just don't have enough dudes, I don't think. So there's that, and then there's the bizarreness, there's the drama, there's the Bucks situation, there's just the Warriors and the Lakers. Whenever you're at the kind of top of the league in popularity, just the amount of drama that surrounds your team is fascinating to me. But yeah, it's going to wrap it up for this episode. If you want to talk to me, at Taylor Metrics on Twitter, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Basketball Index Podcast.